dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing, really, on the war for the free world. At the moment, one of its flashpoints is Ukraine. We are witnessing incredible dynamics at work there between Russia, which clearly is asserting its dominance in at least parts of the country and threatening the rest of it, and the rest of it, which is seeking to break free of Russia's tyranny, as in the past. To discuss this with us, I'm very pleased to say we have Dr. Sebastian Gorka. He is deeply knowledgeable about these matters, now an associate dean and associate professor at the National Defense University, and the author of Fighting the Ideological War. And it's always a pleasure to have him with us, but most especially to talk about, as I say, a subject in which you've thought about and been exposed to for quite some time. Dr. Sebastian Gorka, welcome back. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you, Frank.
Let's talk a little bit about sort of the backdrop to this story, Seb. Ukraine has sort of sprung on most of us in recent days. Give us a flavor of the history that brought us to this point between Ukraine and Russia, most immediately, and the Soviet Union before it. Why is this such an epic struggle?
For many reasons, Frank, not least of which is the size and the strategic importance of the Ukraine and the fact that it is, if you will, the most significant buffer between the Russian Federation and the rest of Central and Western Europe. Let's not forget, I spent 15 years after the fall of communism in Hungary, in the land of my forefathers, which successfully managed to reintegrate into the West to get membership in the EU and NATO. And Hungary, actually, this is not mentioned in many of the maps you see up on the TV screens today, Hungary has a border with the Ukraine. So we have a NATO nation right next to the country that is now under threat by the Russian Federation and by Putin and his Kremlin. So this could be a very high stakes game if the instability spreads beyond the Crimea and Putin makes some kind of grab for the ethnic and linguistic Russian community that exists, that lives in the Ukraine and has done for many, many years.
Of course, Poland is in a similar fix with its borders, and I just very much want to get at this idea that there is, in fact, a lot of, bad blood, shall we say, between the Ukrainians who have yearned to be free of Russia and the Russians. Seb, to the extent that the Russian government is now, lying, I guess is the only way to describe it, about what it is up to in part of Ukraine, notably Crimea at the moment, does this come as a surprise to you, or is this really just standard operating procedure?
My father was imprisoned for life by the communists and escaped from a political prison in the revolution in 1956. So, this doesn't surprise me in the least. The fact is, what we have in Russia, we've got to remember, this is a former KGB colonel. This is a man who has, Vladimir Putin, who stated on the record that the greatest tragedy of the 20th century was the collapse of the Soviet Union. If that's what you believe, that you are going to exploit any possibility for snatching back the grandeur of the Soviet Union. If I were Vladimir Putin, if I was shaped in the Lukyanka, the headquarters of the KGB, whatever country on my periphery showed any instability, whether it was the Balts, whether it was Moldova, Belarusia, the Ukraine, I would be in there in a flash. I would exploit that situation, knowing that right now we have an administration that probably is just going to stay at the level of words and not do anything concretely to undermine my intimidation of my neighbors and my attempt, even if in a weak way, to reconstitute certain elements of the Soviet Union.
You mentioned that if there's any evidence of instability, that you'd be in there in a thrash. In fact, isn't not standard operating procedure for folks like this KGB Colonel Seb Gorka to be fostering instability where possible in order to advance similar designs? If this guy is about rebuilding what I think of as sort of Soviet Union 2.0, maybe minus the communist ideology, but still very much in that sort of imperial tradition, is it beyond him to be conjuring up this kind of pretext for inserting his forces? And again, not just in Crimea, where he is saying they no longer are, but elsewhere in Ukraine, perhaps in the East, and who knows, maybe even in the West.
You're absolutely right, Frank. Let's not forget that these are the people who created standard operating procedures out of deception, out of maskirovka, a false flag operations. This is their stock in trade. Let's look at how the troops were initially deployed to the Crimea. What nation, when they're not doing a covert action but an overt action, actually deploys thousands of troops wearing balaclavas without unit or even rank insignia on their uniforms? So this is absolutely par for the course. As we know, during the Cold War, the idea of active measures, provocatia, the insertion of individuals who would agitate and therefore artificially create the conditions which could be exploited for an escalation, that is absolutely standard, and that is something we should expect, and unfortunately the Ukrainians should expect.
And as you say, from your own family and personal experience, Seb Gorka, the 1956 insertion of Soviet forces then into Hungary to snuff any sign of an aspiration to rejoin the West in that period is a vivid reminder of what these guys are capable of. Seb, let's just turn for a moment to the real challenge that we face, of course. And that is, what do we do about this? How would you recommend the United States, and for that matter, the European Union? We'll be talking a little bit with Diana West momentarily about some of the difficulties there. But what should the free world be doing on behalf of the people of Ukraine who long to be part of it?
Right. Well, we've got to get beyond this pabulum of, you know, we'll boycott the G8 in Sochi, we'll put travel bans on their top diplomats and officials. These are things that the KGB colonel laughs at. We've got to do two things. We've got to consider very aggressive covert measures. America has incredible electronic and cyber capabilities. I think if we had the willpower, we could literally close down or disrupt the personal bank accounts of Vladimir Putin and his nomenclature in a heartbeat, whether they're in Switzerland or somewhere else. And that's something that these people understand. But even if you don't have the willpower to do that, there's something that's very, very cheap. And just ask yourself, or I ask the listeners, what do we think Ronald Reagan, the man you worked for, what would the Gipper do if he was in power now? He would be saying, he wouldn't be wagging his finger and talking about boycotting the G8. He would make open, declarative statements of what America stands for, what the values are upon which this republic was founded, and how these actions are in blatant contravention of the liberty and the justice and the freedom for all that this nation was created to symbolize. And as a result, we will stand by anybody who supports those values anywhere in the world, whether it is in Kiev or whether it is in Kabul. And the fact is, we do not hear speeches of that nature, which may be, you know, inexpensive, may not put kinetic boots on the ground, but send a very strong message, not only to Putin, but also to the people of the Ukraine that are trying to establish their independence yet again.
Yeah, our solidarity is the very least we could do. I actually think Ronald Reagan may be pushing something like his old National Security Decision Directive 75. I've called for a NSDD 75 2.0 to deal with the Soviet Union 2.0. This is a comprehensive strategy, as you know so well, Seb Gorka, that actually contributed mightily to the undoing of the old USSR, and it seems to me it's needed as much today as ever. Seb Gorka will be joining us tomorrow for a very special program at the National Security Action Summit at the Westin Hotel at Washington National Harbor. And you are invited to join us for a program all day. Seb's program will be in the afternoon talking about this very topic and what we should do about freedom for Ukraine and resisting the predations of Vladimir Putin. But the rest of the program will be very interesting as well, and I commend that program to you. Seb Gorka, thank you for your time today and for your appearance tomorrow. We look forward very much to visiting with you, and keep up the great work that you do at the National Defense University, the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, and elsewhere. And we'll be talking next up with Diana West, as promised, right after this.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.